All right, this hour with Scott Yarbrough, we're going to take your phone calls as we talk about the new ice age. We'll get your take on it. And look, nobody's going to bite your head off if we don't agree with what you have to say or your views, too. You're entitled to it. But I would like all of you to chime in on this with regards to climate change and whether you think it's man-made or whether you think it's a cycle from the sun or something else going on in our solar system. So we'll be back. We'll take your calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Scott Yarbrough with us. And Scott, where do people get the book, The New Ice Age? Many like to read this.
You can get it. It has its own website. The website address is www.thenewiceage.net.
Super. When you saw that trend of falling natural gas prices and a little light went off in your head, you know, ding, let's check into this and trends of weather. There are commodity brokers who predict futures based on the weather, aren't there?
Well, there are, but it's not an easy thing to understand.
No. Is it risky?
Generally, they're bigger trends, George, than just something that lasts a year or two.
Well, that's true, too. Now, what we're talking about, what kind of a trend is this? This kind of new ice age we're talking about.
I think this is a mega trend. I think this is that you know, we're going to have the more demand for heating oil and natural gas, propane, than we've had, like I say, since the history of modern man. And when I say modern man, I mean since the date of electricity. So this is going to be a big trend that's going to be with us for another 15 to 20 years.
Automobile manufacturers who make all-wheel drive, they're going to have a booming time too, aren't they?
Well, that's true, especially in the north where the snow should be greater. Although there is the possibility that in certain areas, because of the colder weather, that there won't be as much snow in certain places. One of the things that's likely to happen, as last year happened, was that the Great Lakes were like 98% frozen. So a lot of the lake effect type snows that happen when the planet gets colder and you have colder water that freezes earlier in the year, that won't generate as much snow. So in some cases, there'll actually be less snow with cold, with a colder planet. And it's likely that that will also happen with hurricanes.
Will we see colder winters each winter, or will we sometimes have one that's kind of mild?
Well, they're going to accelerate for the next 5 or 6 years and get just colder and colder and colder. Then we get a bounce. And this will follow somewhat to the sunspot cycle, which is the shortest cycles is 11 years, approximately 11 years. None of these cycles are exact. They all get stretched. They are a little bit shorter, they're a little bit longer, but nominally they're 11 years. So the last one peaked in 2000. We had this last one peak in 2014, and the next one's probably not going to peak until somewhere around 2025, 2026. So it's going to get progressively colder. There's time to work on these things and to get things taken care of. I feel a bit fortunate that I did find this when I did it, because 2-3 years from now it's going to be even tougher, and then once it starts it's going to be tough to play catch up.
Well, that's true, because everything will be taxed at that time, and I don't mean taxed income wise but in terms of challenged. Everything's going to be stretched to the limit, won't it?
If you've got a bad furnace and it's the middle of February and you need to get your furnace fixed because it's due to the fact that it runs 100% of the day, that you can't get a heating contractor because they're all so busy, that's not a good time to want to deal with that. Well, what are you going to tell your family? Well, we've got to wait 2.5 to 3 weeks before we can get a furnace installed.
Funny you say that. My heating contractor came out to the house to winterize it and said, well, it might be time for you to think about a new furnace. And I didn't know if he was doing that because he needed to make a sale or what.
Hard to know.
You never know.
You know, everybody in this country makes a living off everybody else's ignorance. Unfortunately, that's the way it works.
Yeah, let's go to the phones now. Kevin is in Norwich, Connecticut, on the wild card line. Hi, Kevin. Welcome to the program. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, good evening, George, and I am in Connecticut, so pray for me.
You got it.
And I know that we're talking about the science here, so I'm clear on that, but I just wanted to ask the guest, I'm stymied because Pope Francis is all the way behind the whole global warming movement that we're hearing about over in Paris. One would want to think that the pontiff is well-studied, well-reasoned, very prayerful. Is he not getting the right advice, or what? Do you guys have any comments about that?
Well, my response is I have no idea. My guess is that he's probably been spoon-fed certain type of information that will make him go along with the status quo of the people that are in that particular camp. I mentioned a little bit, I started to read that review of the book. That review that said on a first quick read, I found little to criticize in the scientific parts. That comes from a physicist at Princeton University, Professor William Happer. There's another review that if they go to the website from a professor of astrophysics from the National Space Institute at the Technical University of Denmark. And when you look at the fact that you've got 31,000 scientists who are willing to sign a petition that says this is all wrong, the odds are kind of pretty heavily weighed towards the scientific look at this.
You know, John Coleman, former national TV weathercaster and founder of the Weather Channel, is a staunch believer in Earth cycle climate change. And
let me just touch on one other thing here.
Sure, Scott.
And that is this. Oftentimes, people in power make mistakes. I can give you a couple examples. Al Gore said in 2007 that within 7 years, by 2014, that the ice caps would all be melted.
Some of them are growing.
Well, actually, Antarctica is growing. It's actually accreting ice. There's been other things that governments and other people in the power have told us. The FDA told us for years that if you ate fat, if you ate too much fat, you would get fat. And there was a guy in 1963 named Dr. Robert Adkins who said, you know what, we don't think that's right anymore. We think that if carbohydrates convert to sugar, and that's what makes you fat. They held on to that for 50 years. Just within the last couple of years, they came out and said, I think we were wrong about that.
Yeah, Robert Adkins no longer with us.
There have been many instances where people have held on to wrong ideas too long.
And the big question, too, Scott, is it an agenda or is it merely just being uninformed with the wrong idea? I mean, I don't know why all my life I have felt that this was Earth cycles or sun cycles all my life. I'm not a meteorologist. I'm not a climatologist. I just based it on things that I heard coming from so many people I've interviewed, and I just came up with my own interpretation of what's going on. I could be wrong. I mean, I will admit that. I don't think I am, though.
I don't think you are.
Good.
I think that the science in the book speaks for itself. That's why I say I didn't, when I wrote the book, wasn't trying to be political. I'm trying to be scientifically correct. And I think that's what's needed here. And if you look at the science, you study it and you see what's there and what's available, there's a clear message there. And I think also what happens is sometimes from a political standpoint is that people get involved in, if there's an agenda, if there's not an agenda, whether it's bad information, but whatever it is they latch onto it and it's difficult for them to let it go, whether it's wrong or not. And so people hold on to false ideas longer than they should. I have a pretty good feeling, though, that the public, when this is all over with and done, will certainly not trust a whole lot of certain things that government says anymore.
We are going to the international line, Quebec, as the French would say, Quebec in Canada. Petro is with us. Hey, Petro, thanks for calling.
It's my pleasure. It's an excellent pronunciation of our province's name, by the way.
I got something
anyway,
right.
Yes. I wanted to agree totally with your guest. And I also wanted to mention that it is an agenda and an excellent documentary. I used to be a proponent of global warming until I saw a documentary on the subject, which was very well done. It's called The Great Global Warming Swindle. It was produced in Great Britain, and you can find it easily on the net. And in it, they mentioned some interesting facts, like, did you know that carbon dioxide is measured in parts per million? That's less than one-half of 1% of all the gases in the atmosphere.
Yeah, that's right.
And yet, they say that this is the major driver of climate change. Even though the documentary mentioned that in other periods of the past century, there were times when they mentioned it was periods of global cooling, not global warming, like during the 1960s and 70s. So I found there were too many paradoxes, and the documentary brought up several of them. I'm sure your guest book has a lot of them too. And I just wonder, how long is it going to be before people actually investigate the subject instead of just latching onto it as if it was some kind of religious belief?
Good question. What do you think, Scott?
Well, who knows how long it will take for people to adjust to the truth. That's why people listen to your show, George, because you tend to cut through a lot of this kind of
thing. Yeah, I do.
See it from a different angle, and you have a lot more free thinkers here, I think, than a lot of other places. Governments are big. Governments are wide. They're diverse. I think in some cases the left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing. There are other people that think that maybe they do know, but maybe they feel maybe there's nothing they can do about it. That's another possibility. Again, my look at things and my bent here is not that of a political scientist. I am looking at it from the standpoint of what does the science say? That's something that's not ethereal. It's solid. It's and that's why I went with these computer models where they have a lot of history. This is not 25 or 35 years of ocean temperature, data that doesn't have any length to it. So that's what I believe in. That's how I came to the conclusion that I did. I mean, everybody can come to their own conclusion. I just say, look at the science.
Was there anything that you stumbled across, Scott, that startled you?
Yeah, it scared the crap out of me. It was when I saw what was coming, that it was we were not going to go to global warming. We were going to have incredibly frigid temperatures. I think that the problem here is that, who's going to suffer from this? The same people that always suffer, the unprepared and the poor.
Yeah.
And someone needs to look out for the poor down south. You're going to hear news stories, maybe, who knows, it's hard to know what goes through the news and what gets broadcast and what doesn't, but there are going to be people, in especially probably from Cincinnati further south, there are going to be people that were cold, this is the kind of the rule I use. If you were cold last winter, it's even going to be colder for the next 4 or 5 years.
Oh, boy. That's all
and
we need.
So there are people who are going to freeze to death. There are people that are going to get caught with this because they don't know. I'm kind of on a mission here to get to let the word out, to get people prepared, because preparation is what's going to help people.
Your body, too, gets conditioned to certain areas. I spend a lot of time going by the Midwest and then into Los Angeles. And, when you're in L.A. for a long time, you get comfortable with the warmer climates. And then when you go back into a colder climate, it's tough, Scott. Your body really can't take it.
Hey, you got out of Detroit at the right time. What can I tell you, George?
Yep, absolutely. Let's go to Steve in Shelton, Washington. Welcome to the show. Steven, go ahead.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hi.
I live in Puget Sound, about 40 miles from Mount Rainier, and I remember in 1969, they set a record for snow at 120 feet of snow in Mount Rainier, which was eclipsed about 15 years later up at Mount Baker, which is about 90 miles north, at over 120 feet of snow per year. That's a lot of snow. And I remember that year. I live at the lowlands, and we had lots of snow and lots of sledding and lots of fun. But my question was that to Scott about what's your opinion on HARP, some system that some say manipulates or others might say militarizes the weather, and what effect it has on global warming or global cooling.
I am not qualified to speak on that subject. I haven't researched it. I don't know. I'm sure George probably has a much better line on someone who could deal with that. That's information, first of all, that's going to be difficult to get because that stuff's going to be top secret.
And let me drive Steve to our website, Scott, to Google and search for Nick Begich, B-E-G-I-C-H, who's written a book about HARP and has done some extensive work there. They're doing something with that. Some people think it's weather manipulation. Who knows? But something's going on. Something indeed. When you were doing this work, Scott, when you were doing the research for this, did any whistleblowers come forward at all?
Not to me, you know.
Okay. They hold back, don't they?
Well, it's when you have a heated topic like this, sometimes it's difficult for certain people to take sides. And sometimes the middle is a great place to hide. So I don't know. I march to my own drum. I do my own research. I would say to your audience, you know, draw your own conclusions. Come to your, you know, take a look at it and see what you think. No whistleblowers came out of the woodwork.
Carla, Queens, New York. Go for it, Carla.
Hi, George. Thank you for taking my call. Hello, everybody.
Hi.
My honest opinion, is that it's a natural phenomenon. I believe the Earth is convulsing, okay, because too much pollution, exploitation of natural resources, the Earth can't catch up. That's my honest opinion. So for me, I say it's a natural phenomena, but if we're going to continue to pollute and exploit the resources and not give time for, you know, the earth itself, the ground, the oceans to
generate
come back,
itself.
they are convulsing now. This is like a rebellion. You see, that's how I view it.
Carla, good point.
Truly
a good point. And thanks for bringing that. And again, such a huge difference, Scott, between polluting the planet and what we consider to be cyclical climate change. Two different issues, as far as I'm concerned. Both are critical, both are important, but I wish our leaders would concentrate on pollution and get off the man-made climate change bit so we could get something done. Anyway, we're going to come back in a moment here on Coast to Coast AM and take final phone calls. If you want to check out Scott's book, The New Ice Age, simply go to his website, and there's some snippets there, and it's also a great read. We'll be back. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie with you along with Scott Yarbrough, and we're talking about his book, The New Ice Age. This is our final segment. Scott, if you were to add anything more to the book today, what would it be?
That's a good question. That's a real good question. I don't know. I don't really think there's anything that needs to be added to it. The science is there. There's a couple of chapters on how to prepare for what's coming, what you need to do, all the little details as to, you know, for those that are concerned about what they should do. There are probably a couple of other scientific approaches, and one of them I mentioned earlier, which is about the cosmic rays and how they, as the sun's magnetic activity subsides, that we get bombarded with more of them and acts as a shield. I probably would have put that in the book. But other than that, not really.
Okay, so you're happy with it. You're happy with the results and what you did.
I'm very happy.
Okay, good. Let's go to Annie in Alabama. Good morning, Annie. Go ahead.
Thank you,
sure.
Scott. I'd like to ask you a question.
He's standing by.
Suppose you're flying in some disaster or an EMP knocks out every onboard computer you have and all electronics are gone, EFIS and fly-by-wire, and everything's gone, even the so-called analog computers. How are you going to stay on your flight plan unless it becomes mandatory to have manual analog override or mouse switch, M-A-O, backed up by a manual switching system in case that switch should fail? Or you plug the circuits in and out by hand and you have access to manual and analog instruments. How are you going to stay on your flight plan?
Well, you're probably not going to, because in order to get, first of all, you'd have to have the aircraft manufacturers would have to build them like that. And that's probably not very likely, that they're going to go back to old technology when most everything is EFIS and the fly-by-wire. So that's not likely going to happen. The problem would be that it'd be a huge problem. It would be disastrous, basically, what it would be.
I hate to be up in a plane when that happens. Huh? These planes are so electronic these days, I don't think they can fly manually anymore, can they?
Well, there are redundant systems in hydraulics, and normally you can fly the airplane with a lot of them. Now, some of them are more sophisticated than others. The Airbus airplanes are almost all fly-by-wire, and I would rather be at that point in time in a Boeing aircraft, but that's just a preference.
Next up, we go to Alex in Sioux City, Iowa. Thanks, Alex. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. How's it going?
Good.
I had two quick questions.
Sure thing.
You might have touched on these already a little bit, but my first question was about celebrities that are pushing the whole man-made global warming agenda, what your thoughts were on that. Like, for example, I saw Leonardo DiCaprio, it was on C-SPAN, I think, talking to the UN about global warming, and all I could think was, well, how is this guy qualified to be talking about this? And I wonder if you think with celebrities like that, if they're being paid and they know that they're knowingly spreading disinformation, or do you think that they're just, you know, easily manipulated because they don't really know the science behind it and they just have a lot of money to spend? And then my second question is, there's a former Coast to Coast guest who I think is very competent by the name of Cliff High, and he's a believer in the expanding Earth theory, and I believe he thinks that that has a lot to do with the warming that's happening with our planet right now. And I was wondering what you thought of that theory, if you are familiar with it. And I'll take my answer off here.
Okay. In terms of celebrities, Scott, you know, they jump on that bandwagon, don't they?
Yeah. I personally think that, to the first question, from a celebrity standpoint, it's probably just misinformation. These guys are too busy to look at anything themselves, so they just take basically what they've been told. And by from whom they think are, you know, respected, competent people. So I don't think that there's anything there that's malicious. It's like most of this stuff, it's just ignorance. And in terms of, what was the second question again?
I have no idea.
That different philosophy. Again, that's not something that I've studied. But my feeling is that big yellow ball up there is what, you know, as that goes, so goes the temperature of the Earth. And that is the prime heating element of what we have here. Turn it off tomorrow, you know what happens. So this other philosophy, there's lots of different, mine's just pretty straightforward. It's all has to do with the heat source. It's like our furnace, And when the furnace turns down or shuts down a little bit or doesn't run as much, it gets cooler.
And I think a lot of people, and I harp back to this, are confusing pollution, which nobody should want, with climate change, which is an earth cycle.
I agree, George.
Yeah.
I agree with you. You know, there's no, listen, the most important thing we can have on this planet is clean water. That is.
And clean air.
And clean air. Well, I mean, you're preaching to the choir here. I agree with you. It's very important. And if people confuse it, it gets back to that issue of understanding what the tenets of what it is you're talking about. And it's not pollution, but to some degree it is pollution. In terms from a carbon standpoint, I mean, you have a coal plant that pumps out a lot of carbon into the atmosphere. That does make a difference. That's why they put coal scrubbers on all these stacks to keep that pollution down. And yeah, that's important. Pollution doesn't do, you know, anybody on the planet any good. You look at these chemical companies that put all this stuff out into the environment. You know, we've managed to shut it down here. I can't imagine what it must be like in China. If there's any good thing that we've lost in terms of a lot of our manufacturing is we've exported a lot of our pollution to the other side of the world.
Well, we sure have. Brian is in Indianapolis. We go east of the Rockies now. Hi, Brian. Thank you for calling.
Hey, George. Hi. Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Hey, listen, a couple of things. I just got a new furnace in my house about 3 weeks ago, so I'm set to go on that.
All righty.
I'm going to get my wife for Christmas a Coast Insider membership, so she'll be pleased with that.
Super.
Now, this global warming is an agenda for climate change, whatever they want to call it. It's an agenda of fear that they try to push on us. So I'm a prepper most of the time, and I got a good head start. I'm not as good as I should be, but I'm fixing to shift gears. So here's my question. A solar generator versus a gas generator. If the sun is getting less hot and less bright, wouldn't that make the solar generator obsolete over the gasoline or diesel generator, or which would be the better to get?
Well, I know a lot about solar generators, and the sun's not going to get that weak where its rays aren't going to, you know, take care of the solar panels and cook up your power. So that's a great way. Natural gas is a great way for a generator as well. The big question is, if something happens to the gas flow, you're out of luck. If something happens to the sun, we're all out of luck. Doesn't matter what kind of generator you have. So, you know, if you could afford both, that would be cool. But the solar generator might have a leg up in terms of ongoing power source. What do you think, Scott?
Well, I have to agree. I think the biggest situation or the biggest issue with solar is always, a lot of it depends on where you live and what kind of how many days you have of sunshine.
That's right.
If you live in, you know, in southern Colorado or New Mexico, where they have a lot of sunshine all the time, that's a great way to go. If you live up where, I think he said Indianapolis,
he's in Indianapolis. He may be driving through, but assuming he's in the Midwest, you know, you get your days of sun, but you know, not as much as you get in California or New Mexico.
One of the things that's in the book is, and part of the thing about prepping is redundancy. And as a pilot, and as the woman from Alabama said earlier, what happens when you lose this system? Sometimes it's good to have another system. And something that, you know, that's what redundancy is for. And I go into that in the book. It's probably the most important part is redundancy. And it's probably one of the things that I'm most proud about is how I talked about that, and hopefully that'll put people on the right path. But he's doing somewhat similar in terms of having another generator to back things up.
Are there any of these leaders that are in the Paris conference, are any of them saying, wait a minute, this is an earth cycle, sorry? I don't hear that coming, do you?
Well, you know, if you look at what Canada did, you know, a year ago, they, when they had the 2014 meeting in Lima, Peru, Canada just said, you know what, we're not going to do this anymore. We're just, good luck, you know, you're on your own. Why did they do that?
Well, you know, that's interesting. That, of course, was during the Stephen Harper time, and now you've got the Justin Trudeau coming. You know, he is probably a supporter of man-made climate change, I would guess.
Maybe. The FDA said that, you know, they also told us they had weapons. There was no doubt they had weapons of mass destruction.
Oh, I know. I know. Look at the mess we've created.
They never
there.
Did find the damn things, though.
Let's go to David in Lake Tahoe, California, west of the Rockies. Hi, David. Good morning. Go ahead.
Hello, George. Hello, Scott. Happy Thanksgiving.
You too,
Merry
Dave.
Merry Christmas to you both.
Thank you.
You know, I watched this Paris climate thing today, and whenever I watch these international things, they look like a bunch of little scared, lost puppy dogs following Obama around, listening to everything, you know, doing everything he says, and the guy hasn't gotten one thing right that I can remember since he's been elected. Now, are they naive? Are they scared? Are they all in it together or what? Because they all look like, you know, you look at all these European, the only one that looks like they have any strength is Putin. And I'm not saying I'm on his team or...
Oh, no, I understand. I agree. He looks stronger and stronger every day, doesn't he?
But the rest of them, they look like, you know, Obama goes in there, he's like telling them everything to do, and they follow him around and do whatever, you know, this is what we're doing, and they all just jump on his coattails like scared little girls. And I don't get it because I'm in Lake Tahoe right now. It's like 15 degrees. You know, and that it shouldn't be that cold this time of the year. So
yikes.
I think that it's totally political, and the Republicans are in the oil industry and the Democrats are for the alternative energy, and they're just fighting back and forth over who's going to control our energy sources. So what do you think about that, Scott? I'll listen off the air.
All right, David, thanks.
Well, we're getting into the political arena again.
Yeah, well, you can't avoid it, Scott. You can't avoid it.
I don't know what their all I can do is speculate as to what the reasoning might be. And normally my look at these kind of things is follow the money trail. And if
yep.
you follow the
who
money
benefits?
Trail,
who benefits?
Then where does that take you? If there's a lot of energy used in the world, I suppose if it was taxed, it might be a huge income source.
Scott, are we at risk if we go down this path of man-made climate change? Will we miss the boat here?
Well, I think what happens is that unless we can spread the word about what's really happening, then what's going to happen is that people are just going to be let off a cliff. It's wrong, I'm like the fellow from Indianapolis. I'm preparing to be able to ride through these nasty, horrible winters, further south, of course. What's the risk? The risk could be horrific. We could have social chaos. You know, there's another thing that comes from cold weather like this. You know, there's a 100-year flu pandemic cycle. Guess when that's due? 2018.
Yeah.
In 1918, we have 20 million people in the United States died from the flu. Cold weather breeds this. The sun's not out as much. It's weak. It's important that human beings have vitamin D and you get the best of it from the sun. So, there's all kinds of risks. There's risks of not having enough food. There's risks of having... I think at some point in time down the road, you will see this. People don't know whether to pay their heating bill or to buy food.
Let's go to Las Vegas. Hey, Jim, first-time caller, you're up with us.
Hi, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome, Jim.
Thank you for your work, Scott. It's critically important. I'd like to strongly make a point that I don't hear anybody making anywhere, and it flabbergasts me that it's not being made. Contrary to Obama and Gore's contention that carbon dioxide is a pollutant that we need to reduce and get rid of, aside from oxygen, it is the most critical gas in our atmosphere for plants and all animals, which include us. It's absolutely essential. When I was in junior high school, I heard something that all of a sudden made me think maybe there is a God. It was called a carbon cycle. Man, what a neat invention this is. Whoever thought this up is really smart. The plants need carbon dioxide to survive.
And don't forget, during the era of the dinosaurs, we had a higher CO2 level, and those plants were huge. Scott, we are out of time, but good luck with your work, and stay in touch with us, will you?
Will do, George. Thanks for your time.
All right. Scott Yarbrough, the name of his book, again, is The New Ice Age, and I think he's spot on. I have been a believer for years in the cycle of this planet, the solar system, the sun, all contributing to climate change. And there is climate change. I'm not going to deny that, but I think it's an Earth cycle. And on the other hand, as we've been talking about, there's pollution on this planet, and that needs to be eradicated. That needs to be stopped. Air pollution, water pollution, all this other stuff. Putting fluoride in the water. Stop doing it. We're going to come back in a moment. We're going to talk about ETs and humans, or humans and ETs. We'll see.